Our reading left off with 16 passersby having very different inner reactions to a person seated on a town square bench. And Coach Lombardi asked the key question, what's going on here? Well, remembering our story for all ages, clearly what's going on here is that they all saw a cat. And they all saw the same cat, the same person, from their own perspective, and reacted accordingly. 15th century German philosopher Jacob Bohme noticed this dynamic and pithily stated it as, whatever the self describes, describes the self. Whatever the self describes, describes the self. Centuries later, author Anais Nin echoed this same truth. I do not see the world as it is. I see it as I am. This is why each passerby creates their own meaning from the person's presence. And this meaning comes solely from their internal interpretation. And this interpretation, in turn, comes from one's predominant lens on the world or level of consciousness. So to a great degree, it is our own consciousness that actually defines what we see as reality. And it's really important to realize this, because our ego, our rational mind, thinks our interpretations represent reality with a capital R. Of course this person is this, or of course they're that. Isn't it obvious? Sheesh. But in truth, we don't know what or who they are. They may have a serious mental illness, or a broken heart, or be potentially violent. Or they may be a fully enlightened spiritual sage brimming with unconditional love and the wisdom of the ages. Right? We don't know. But our autopilot minds, filtered through a particular level of consciousness, tells us that we do. And we do this all the time. So because this is a universal, unconscious process of the human psyche, it's important to become conscious of it, or in some therapeutic language, to make the subjective objective. Because when we become aware that we're operating on autopilot at a certain level, we have the opportunity to grow beyond it. And this changes both ourselves and the world. I'll come back to that thought. But now let's go through the reactions of our passersby again, and this time touch on the level of consciousness that each person holds. As I noted at our reading, this model comes from psychiatrist and researcher David R. Hawkins, who not incidentally combined his medical training with a deep sense of spirituality that stemmed from a near-death experience that he had as a boy. Like any model, it doesn't account for every factor, in this case, those affecting human perception, but I still find it insightful and worth thinking about. And Dr. Hawkins explains that these levels of consciousness are rarely found in pure form. A person might operate from different levels in different parts of life or in different situations, but in general, we still mostly occupy one dominant level. So, are we ready to quickly check out these through the folks who passed by on the bench? All right, thank you. Number one, I'll repeat their thoughts to reorient us. OMG, are they dirty, disgraceful, disgusting? Get them out of here. This reaction comes from the lowest level of consciousness, which Hawkins names shame. Shame creates unbearably low self-esteem. And it's so powerful that it often manifests either as violence to oneself or as intolerant cruelty to others, inflicted in a futile attempt to expunge the pain of it from oneself. Two, wow, what a loser. They must have made some bad choices to end up like that, but they deserve it. Just up from shame is guilt. Now, there's healthy guilt, which is appropriate remorse for a mistake. But here Hawkins means a consuming guilt that feels unforgivable and is therefore obsessed with moralistic punishment of ourselves and or others. Number three, boy, they look desperate. Just one more sign the world is a complete mess. After guilt on this scale is hopelessness or despair. This is a state of deep helplessness where even if resources are available, the energy to use them might be absent. People stuck in hopelessness are dependent and often feel like a burden to others, because to them, indeed, life seems primarily like a burden. Our fourth person passes and thinks, they seem forlorn, probably don't have any friends. It's tragic. This is an expression of what Hawkins calls grief. Just to step up from hopelessness, it isn't despairing, but it's usually depressed. Like guilt, there is normal grief that sometimes we need to pass through. But this type of grief, again, is all-consuming, where life's losses feel constant and overwhelming. Five, that person looks like a menace. Maybe I should call the police before they commit some crime. This is the level of fear speaking, which of course is rampant in our culture right now. And as Hawkins says, it seems to run much of the world, in no small part because so-called leaders often use it to manipulate the masses. Of course, there are real threats in the world, but fear as a dominant level of consciousness becomes obsessed with a world full of hazards that must be constantly guarded against. At its worst, it expands into full-blown paranoia. Six, I'm so frustrated that we can't solve homelessness. All they need is a decent job. Why doesn't somebody do something? This is the expression of what Hawkins terms desire. Desire is preferable to the levels below it because it contains positive energy, but by itself, it is also shallow and frail. Plus, with it come the shadows of addictions, greed, and the lust for power or prestige, etc. The seventh person passes by. Man, I should kick their sorry butt and drag it out of my neighborhood. This is anger speaking, a close relation to fear. It's got more energy than the previous levels, but as we know, it can be used to build or destroy. Righteous anger over social injustices can spark positive change, but all too often anger is about resentment and revenge, and therefore volatile and dangerous. Eight, that person is an embarrassment, mostly to themselves. Why don't some people have a little self-respect? This is the voice of pride. Pride has a positive aspect and is usually the first level that feels good to a person, but only in relation to the levels below it. Because pride remains vulnerable to external conditions which can deteriorate, so it's brittle. It can also be arrogant and exclusive and hence divisive. Nine, gee, poor soul, I wonder if they know there's a homeless shelter not too far away. This, says Hawkins, is courage talking. And in this model, courage is the critical watershed where a person truly moves from being a victim to being empowered. As he puts it, at the lower level, the world is seen as hopeless, sad, frightening, or frustrating. But at the level of courage, life is seen to be exciting, challenging, and stimulating. Courage implies the willingness to try new things and deal with the changes and challenges of life. And as the expression of sympathy for the person on the bench implies, it's also the level at which one starts to truly take other people into account. Because below courage, we're almost completely wrapped up in our own pain and or fear and or anger, and in the case of pride, with our image. 10. I haven't seen them before. Not my style, but hey, live and let live. This is what David Hawkins terms neutrality. He calls it that because below it, life is seen as opposing dichotomies that create polarization. Worthy and unworthy, guilty and innocent, safe and unsafe, good and evil, etc. But at neutrality, complexity is allowed, and there's a basic sense of well-being and trust in life, and therefore less need to be judgmental of others or oneself. Now, the 11th person passes by the person on the bench. That's interesting. When I'm done shopping, I might go see if I can cheer them up, and maybe I'll volunteer at the local shelter. This Hawkins calls willingness, what he calls the gateway to higher levels. It's where one overcomes inner resistance to life and is committed to full participation, and where we're also sympathetic and responsive to others' needs. 12. Wow, what an interesting face. They probably have an interesting story to tell. This is acceptance talking, which is not passivity, but full engagement without any need to control. Even more than willingness, this is the level that lives harmoniously with the forces of life, come what may. Here, external circumstances don't make one happy or unhappy, and love can't be given or taken away by another. At acceptance, love and satisfaction are created from within. The 13th person passes by. Curious. I wonder what goes on in the heads of people like that. No doubt someone studied it. I'll have to look it up. This is an expression of reason or rationality. This level is obviously immensely valuable and a cornerstone of our modern world. And one glance at our culture reveals what happens when some people abandon it. But because reason is centered in the head and not the heart, it can be cool and removed. And because it's bound by its own methods of knowing, by itself it can't serve as a guide to higher spiritual truth. 14. What a kindly looking person. I'll bet they're nice. Above reason is love. Not love from the movies, which is all about passion and is easily frustrated. Here, love means agape, an unconditional and unwavering regard for one's fellow humans and other sentient beings. Love emanates from the heart and overcomes conflict not by attacking it or analyzing it, but by transcending it. 15. Wow, to be calm and relaxed and not care about stuff or what others think of you, now that's freedom. This level Hawkins calls joy, the rare domain of advanced spiritual adepts. Here the world, despite its troubles, is illuminated by exquisite beauty. This kind of joy expresses itself mainly through compassion, which when felt by another has a great healing and freeing effect. Finally, the last passerby thinks, my beloved, how beautiful you are, a glimmering gem in the interconnected universe of all life. This is the level that's hard to put into words, that of enlightenment or unitive consciousness. This is the level of the great spiritual figures of history who seem to have a direct connection to higher realms, and whose loving energy spans the ages and continues to inspire and uplift humanity. Okay, hearing all this now, is it pretty obvious that each level of consciousness largely colors one's so-called reality? Like they all saw a cat? Sure. And it's vital to see that it also affects the reality of the person on the bench. And multiply that by millions. Because the level we bring to an encounter strongly influences its character and thus how they feel and respond. And of course, this is true in all our interactions, including our efforts to bring justice and healing to the wider world. Because as British spiritual teacher and activist Andrew Harvey tells us in this abridged passage, an activism not purified by spiritual and psychological self-awareness will only perpetuate the problem it is trying to solve, however righteous its intentions. When, however, deep spiritual vision, or in today's framing, high spiritual consciousness, is married to a pragmatic drive to transform political, economic and social institutions, a holy force, the power of wisdom and love in action, is born. So transcending our habitual distortions and limitations of our own perceptions by raising our prevailing level of consciousness benefits not just ourselves, but the world. So then what we want to do is to regularly engage in practices that produce higher states of consciousness in our hearts, heads, and spirits. For while the higher states may be temporary, if we practice consistently, those temporary states can raise our level enough to become permanent traits. Dr. Hawkins states that this ascent isn't easy, but he also writes from personal experience that just one instant in a very high state can completely change a person's orientation to life. Some tried and true state-raising methods include chanting and other musical forms, movement and dance, breathing practices, performing rituals, fasting, meditation and prayer, reading or listening to sources of spiritual wisdom, connecting with stirring art or nature, engaging in an absorbing creative activity, and more. One of those and mores is what's known as creative visualization or active imagination. And especially since today's anthem was Imagine, let's end by doing that. I invite you to close your eyes. Take a deep breath and release it. Find a deep breathing rhythm that suits you. Continue to breathe fully and imagine yourself living from the highest levels of consciousness, love, joy, and enlightenment. I realize it's just an exercise, but see if you can imagine, not only in your mind, but now in your heart and your body, what those levels of spiritual consciousness might feel like. Love, joy, enlightenment. Imagine, for example, that you yourself are a Buddha, an awakened soul, filled to overflowing with joy and compassion. Feel your heart center expand accordingly. Now picture yourself passing that bench in the village square. How do you think about, feel about, the person sitting on it? My beloved, how beautiful you are, a glimmering gem in the interconnected universe of all life. How do you then behave toward them? How do you regard and behave toward everyone you meet? How do you bring this into the ways you engage in our shared civic life? Now open your eyes and look toward a neighbor, not the person you may have come with today. How do you regard them? If you did come with someone, now turn to them. Viewing them from these highest imagined levels, do you see them differently than you did 20 minutes ago? Even just a little bit? How might this guide your interactions with them? Thank you for your imaginings. And recalling that I do not see the world as it is, I see it as I am. Whatever consciousness-lifting methods we employ, let's keep practicing at seeing it from the highest level we can envision and embody. Because as John Lennon knew, this transforms the world. Please sing along. Stay and blessed be.